We're at Proverbs 21, and we're verse 18. Proverbs 21, as I mentioned last week, is one of those books under the ministry of the Holy Spirit and inspiration. He inspired Solomon to use a few unusual words. And he did that in such a way that even Hebrew scholars that understand it and read it, and they're experts or whatever, the rabbis that know it, when they reach this part of the book, they got to slow down and stop and go, what does he mean? What's he talking about? He told us in the first chapter that he was going to teach us the sayings of a wise man, how to understand a riddle, how to understand an enigma. How do you understand two different sentences that are both true, and yet there seem to be an opposition to each other? How do you come to an understanding of those things and thus gain wisdom? And then how do you take this wisdom and understanding and put it into wisdom and application? And when we got to this chapter, we've spent two classes already on 21. I think we'll finish it tonight. But we're seeing him just slow us down and stop us and use some words that are only used once in the whole Old Testament, or used three times in the whole Old Testament. And they just kind of come together in this chapter, and he's saying, slow down, think about it for just a second. This is part of the section of Proverbs that some think that Solomon just kind of grabbed a whole bunch of stuff and threw it together with no rhyme or reason. And rather than that, I see inspiration leading Solomon to select these things and to carry a thought through it in a very subtle way. And what we find in Proverbs 21, the first four verses, are about motivations and attitudes. What's the driving force in our life? Verses 5 to 8 are the fact that actions have consequences that goes along with them, the principle of sowing and reaping. We find in 9 to 14, repairing harmed relationships. Now, you put all these together, and they're all interrelated, although all these verses seem to be scattered all over the place. Because life is about motivation and attitudes, but it's also about the actions we take as a result of the motivations and attitudes. And those things have consequences that we have to live out. And these things, when they're not applied properly, they harm relationships. So how do you go about fixing these relationships? When your motivation is to manipulate or to deceive, obviously there's going to be some consequences to that somewhere down the line. We're in this next section, 15 to 19, is about justice and testing that goes along with justice. And we got to verse 18. I'm going to read quickly, and we've got the blanks filled in here on the first couple of these. Says the verse 15, the execution of justice is joy for the righteous, but it's terror to the workers of iniquity. A righteous person likes to see justice executed in one sense of the word, likes to see that when the law is laid down, certain things happen as a result, justice is executed. But a worker of iniquity, a person of iniquity, is one that twists the truth around for selfish ends. That's what iniquity means, to twist. So what happens if you are in the world and you see justice being carried out, and your way of getting through the world is twisting the truth around to get your own way? It says it brings terror to you when you see justice, because you know eventually you could get caught, and if you do get caught, justice could be meted out. So workers of iniquity hate to see justice executed because their own safety comes into question. If they're next, what if there is justice being carried out and not the grace they're going to try and manipulate out of people? So it does bring about some questioning in a worker of iniquity. Verse 16, a man who wanders from the way of understanding will rest in the assembly of the dead. Now, this is a word that the word wander is like Abraham wandering from his father's house in Genesis 20:13. That's the first use of the word. And Genesis 21:14 of Ishmael and Hagar wandering about in the wilderness. So one of them, Abraham, was wandering. He's also trying to make an excuse here for when he's standing in front of the Philistine king. say you're my sister so they won't kill me. And he's trying to explain himself to Abimelech, and he says, well, we were wandering around out here. So much for the call of Abraham. Go to the place, I'll show you. He wasn't really wandering aimlessly, but Ishmael and Hagar were, which is kind of the picture. We covered a verse Sunday morning, Hebrews 2:1. It talked about, be careful lest you drift away. Drifting away is just slightly getting off course, not putting enough energy into the system to keep a straight course. I think about being out on a lake at times, and if you don't have an anchor down, you'll drift all over the place in that lake, because there'll be currents you can't see, there'll be slight winds. You'll find yourself somehow along the way drifting along. Well, that's kind of this word that we have here. A man who wanders from the way of understanding. Understanding is sakal, which is the word for practical wisdom. There's just some practical things that we have to do. It says, we'll rest. This is the word ruach, which is the Noah word. Interesting word. In the assembly, which is the word kahal, which is kind of the Hebrew equivalent of ecclesia, the word for assembly in the New Testament, which took on a technical meaning called the church. He says, we'll rest in the assembly of the dead. Now, lack of practical wisdom can be deadly. Okay, don't play in the traffic. Okay, that's kind of a lack of practical wisdom. Lack of practical wisdom, don't text and drive. Let's get right down to it. That's a lack of practical wisdom there. And it can be deadly. Now, verse 17 says, he who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. The word for pleasure, samka, is a word used 93 times, but it is used to describe the rejoicing of a religious festival. And so in this proverb, what he's talking about, he who loves celebration is a better translation of the word. He celebrates just to celebrate, for celebration's sake. Well, let's have a party. Well, our team won, so let's have a party. But our team lost, so let's have a party. Whatever it is, the answer is, let's have a party to it. And so he who loves celebration will become a poor man. Now, a lot of people that like celebration have a whole lot of money in the physical realm. But poverty is not just physical, but spiritual. And I think this looks at spiritual poverty for sure. Celebration, for its own sake, leads to spiritual poverty. Because not everybody, Solomon got off track for 20 years that we know about, and he still had a lot of gold when he was left, right? Did he just celebrate for celebration's sake at some point in that 20 years? Well, that's what it sounds like in the book of Ecclesiastes. You know, he used to get drunk to see what else he could think up, because he'd run out of things to think up when he was sober. So that's what he did. He plied his mind with wine in order to think up new things to do. Hey, I heard about these funny-looking birds. Let's go get some. So he gets the apes and the peacocks and all the other stuff that comes along, and they don't satisfy. Celebration, for its own sake, leads to spiritual poverty. 18 is where we left off. And these are really cool words that he uses. The wicked, this is our word rasha again. Rasha is the word for actively immoral. This is a person that not only knows what immorality is, but is actively involved in it. And that's the word they translated wicked here. It says the wicked is a ransom. Oh, this is crazy. Ransom is the word kopher, K-O-P-H-E-R. This is a word we get... Kafar is a covering. It becomes used for the covering of the mercy seat. It's interesting, the first usage of this word, it's only used 17 times, is Genesis 6:14, where there, covered over with the word pitch. This is the word pitch. Kofar is the word pitch. It's a covering that is used. So that's where they get from this covering. A ransom is a covering. is what it is. And that's how the words are interrelated. Exodus 21:30 and Exodus 30 verse 12, it's used clearly there of a ransom, paying a ransom to redeem somebody. It says the wicked is a ransom for the righteous. Did he make you stop and think? I thought the righteous, Jesus, was a ransom for the wicked, us. He was a redeemer. Why is this turned around, backwards? It says, and the treacherous is in the place of the upright. Well, you start trying to see this the way Solomon does from a lot of different directions. Sometimes the wicked demand so much attention that righteous can lead a quiet life. Quiet goes in there. What happens in a nation where there is lawlessness? Sometimes it's easy to just blend into the scenery. Okay? But because what? The wicked is getting all the attention. So it could be, in a sense, that wicked is buying all the attention of the justice and peacekeepers, and the treacherous is in the place of the upright. That treacherous is out there with the attention. And so what's 1 Timothy 2 about? Pray for those who are in leadership that we may lead a quiet and tranquil life. Okay, and he's saying here that, hey, sometimes all these evildoers out there, the government has to focus their attention on them to keep the peace, and you might get to carry on and conduct your business in a calmer way. So the wicked is a ransom for the righteous, and the treacherous is in the place of the upright. Verse 19. Oh, this is a good one. First of all, do you remember verse 9? Verse 9. It's better to live in a corner of a roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. Contentious is a word that means a brawler. Okay, so it's not just one that talks. Okay, this is one that will throw things, I guess, rolling pins and all this other stuff. It's better to... That was now verse 9, you think about that. The point on that was a man needs to take charge of his house. He doesn't need to be living on the roof of his house, okay, because he's abdicated responsibility. That was the point. A man needs to take charge of his house because God set him to be the leader over the house, okay? Not a master slave, but without question, the spiritual leader of the house. Now, here's another verse. It's kind of interesting. It says, it's better to live in a desert land. The desert land is a midbar. It's a Hebrew 101 word, and it's a word for wilderness. It's a desert. It's a wilderness. Jesus went out there. Moses went out in the wilderness. The Jews wandered in the wilderness. Used a lot. He says, than with a contentious, and this word is Midian. Midian, M-I-D-Y-A-N, once again. The same word for brawling, but then it adds something here. And vexing woman. Now, vexing is the word kaas. K-A-A-S. Kaas. This particular word is used 26 times. And its root is anger. Vex is kind of like, well, we don't know what to do with this word, so we'll make it a vexing question. We don't know how to translate it. It's a word that means angry, wrathful. Interesting comparison in Deuteronomy 32, verse 19 and 27. The Lord possesses this quality. That makes us stop and think, doesn't it? Because if you're reading Proverbs and you're a Jew, you've already read Deuteronomy. Okay, and so you're saying, boy, I haven't seen this word in a while. What's this word about? Angry. Does the Lord get angry? Yeah. Does he get wrathful? Yes. The Lord possesses this quality, but he possesses it perfectly. Okay, so he says it's better to live in a desert. Out in the middle of nowhere, by yourself, than with a brawling and angry woman. That's what he's saying. Now, one might think it is better to leave. Okay, that's fill in the blank is leave there. One might think it's better to leave than to find out why the wife is angry and contentious. Quiet. One might think it's better to leave than to find out why the wife is angry and contentious, but that's not manly. See, this is about Solomon is talking about being a man in your household and being a leader in your household, and he's saying from the perspective of the world, okay, you just give up. Move up to the rooftop. Okay, I'm going to live on the rooftop. She can have the bottom floor. I'll take the top floor, even though there's no roof over the top floor. Okay? And the other thing is, it's so bad, I'm going to leave the rooftop and I'm going to go to the desert. Okay? I'm going to get out there and I'm going to get away. Both of them indicates that the man has not been a man. He's not being what God called him to be. Now, when he adds the angry thing in here, and we find out there is a righteous anger of this type, okay, we know because the Lord possesses it. Why do people get angry? That's what the man ought to be asking. Why are you so mad about everything? That takes some care and compassion other than stop being mad because I'm the man of the house. Okay? That doesn't work. It just, if it don't boil over, it's simmering. Okay? Why do we get angry? Why does anybody get angry? A lot of times it's not righteous, but it's unfulfilled expectations. Okay? She's expecting something he's not providing. In this case, it'd probably say it's manliness. Okay? He's not providing that. So she is upset. There is an inherent conflict inside of women and an inherent conflict inside of men, just to be fair. Okay? Women want to rule their husbands. That goes back to the problem in the garden, Genesis chapter 3. And they hate it when he lets them. Okay? So here is this tension and this conflict. Man feels like he fell because he didn't protect his wife from the serpent to begin with. So he wants to cut her all the slack in the world, and he wants to be kind and gracious, and he becomes so kind and gracious he stops being a man. So there's an inner conflict inside of both of them. God said, when you figure it out, you've grown up. You're mature. You're where I'm trying to get you. So here is this man in this situation. He says it's better to leave. No, don't leave. Deal with it. Figure out what's going on. Figure out how you can fix it. Love as Christ loved the church. Ephesians chapter 5. So, now, that's our fourth main point here, which deals with justice and testing. Okay, what's right, what's wrong? Testing is going... Do you love pleasure more than anything else? That celebration. Wicked is a ransom. Are you just trying to live a quiet and godly life? Is that what your objective is? Or are you just trying to get all the attention through all the wickedness? Or a desert land, okay? Where's the justice in that and not assuming the role that God has called you to? There's not any. Now, point five, next verses, 20 to 26, are consequential blessings and discipline. Now, verse 20 says, there is precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise. But a foolish man swallows it up. This foolish man is Kasiel, K-E-C-I-Y-A-L, Kasiel. And it's a word that means stupid. Of course, that's politically incorrect now, but if you read it in the Hebrew lexicons, it says stupid. So I'm just quoting them. Silly or foolish is what it is meaning. A foolish man swallows it up. The point he's making here, the principle, is foolishness doesn't plan for the future. Okay? Precious treasure in the oil and dwelling of the wise. Maybe the person was wise and he accumulated some things, but then is foolish because he just consumes it all and doesn't plan any for the future. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die type of attitude. And Solomon's saying that's just foolish to not think that way. Hadn't he said that earlier? Didn't he say that in Proverbs 6 when he said, "Go to the ant, O sluggard, and learn from her. She stores up in the summer for the winter." In other words, plan ahead. There's some people think that's not walking by faith. No, it's walking by faith to do the things God says to do. That's what walking by faith is. So when he says, think about the future, plan for the future, don't obsess about it because it's not in your hands anyway. It's this hope word. Hope is faith about the future. So don't obsess about it, but certainly think about it. Think about the latter days if God tarries and if if you make it that far. Gray hair was that a blessing? It's an honor to have gray hair. So foolishness doesn't plan for the future. Verse 21, we had a fresh board for this one. Normally we see words like these in sentences that have other words that describe what they are. Seldom do we see all these words in the same sentence. Okay? Because these are powerful words. They're all amazing words that he puts together. He who pursues, and first, the word pursue is radaph, R-A-D-A-P-H. And this is a word that means, it does mean to pursue, but it can mean to persecute. Okay, it can go that far, but the word radaph is a word that means to follow after. But the important thing about this word, because it's a common word, is that it's a cal participle. So it's talking about an ongoing action. Okay, the participles normally in the Hebrew indicate something that's going on, continuous. You want consistency behind it. So he says, he who pursues righteousness. So it's not just, well, today I'm going to be righteous, but tomorrow I'm going to live like a devil. It's one of these things that this is what I want my life to be. Okay? I want to know what is righteous, and I want to try to live by it. So he who pursues righteousness, righteousness is tzedakah, T-Z-E, D-A-Q-A-H. Zedakah. T-Z-E-D-A-Q. And this is a normal word for righteousness. Basically means upright. It's the attitude and idea of right living. And the root meaning of this group of words is straight. Just like the word righteous in the Greek is dikaios, and its root meaning is straight. So that means that you have a boundary, you have a guideline, you have a rule, and that you're walking that. The one who's pursuing to walk the straight line through life. But not just that, and loyalty. Loyalty is the word chesed, C-H-E-S-E-D-H. Chesed is a word you see translated loyalty, loving kindness, but I think the best rendering of this word is loyal love. My old seminary professor and president did an amazing study on this word, and the first church I took up in Bartlesville was actually originally named Chesed Bible Church. And then they decided they changed the name because people thought they were a cult because they had a Hebrew name attached to them. So they changed it to Grace Bible Church, okay, like everybody else. So anyway, the head Chesed is, it's a word that means loyal love. It is attachment. It is a love that's not going to go away. It is a commitment type of love. And it's beautifully used and interwoven throughout the Old Testament. And he says, you pursue righteousness and loyal love. That means that you're going to do the right thing even if everybody else doesn't. Okay? It means that you're going to be loyal to your family. You're going to be loyal to your friends. Okay? Even if they're disloyal to you. Okay? He who pursues these things, this is what I want my life to be, in other words. Because the pursue is a participle, and it's got two objects to it, righteousness and loyalty. So he who pursues righteousness and loyalty finds. And this is a word that indicates if and then. It's a conditional promise. If these things happen, then this is going to happen. It's a way of stating it without actually using if and then. He who pursues it finds life. Chaim. Chayim. Chaim. This is the word for life. And I the word chay all by itself is the singular for life. Normally, you see the word, or frequently, I'm not going to say normally, frequently you see it in the plural like this. Because it's saying that you have more than one manner of expression of this existence that you have. You have lives that you live. It doesn't mean you have them diametrically opposed to each other with a split personality. What it does mean is that you have a life, a husband and wife have a life together. The man, the daddy, and the family have a life. You have another life with your friends. You have another life with your business associates. You put it all together. Then it's what it's saying is it's going to impact every aspect of your life if you pursue righteousness and loyalty. It will affect every part of your life is what it will do. So here is the word life. Again, they're Radoff used, I don't know how many times, I didn't write it down here. Zedekah is about the same thing. Righteousness used hundreds of times. Hebrew 101 word. Kesed, hundreds of times. Chayim, hundreds of times. This is important because we're in a chapter that Solomon's picking out words used only 3 times or 15 times or 20 times. Then he just puts all these words together. So here is, he finds life, righteousness. This is cool. Zedekah. Hey, you're pursuing righteousness. You're going to find righteousness. Okay? That's what it's saying. If you don't pursue it, guess what? You're not going to find it. You might know what it is, but if you don't want it in your life, you're not going to get there. So if you pursue righteousness and loyalty, kesed, you're going to find life, all aspects of it. You're going to find righteousness, going to be one of the results. And the last one is honor, kabod, K-A-B-O-D-H, kabod. And this word for honor is a word that means weight. That's where you get the word honor from. And inherently, the root meaning of the word is weight. Used like in weighing the scales or something, the different weights that are used on a balance scale. And from there you get the word honor, because you got more weight to you than you got problems against you in a way. You've overcome the world. Like faith is a victory that overcomes the world, and when that comes honor. So he says, you pursue righteousness and loyalty, what are you going to find? Life. New Testament calls it life indeed. Calls it life more abundantly. This word just uses to Jew, chayim. Every kind of life you can imagine that's good and righteous. Because if it's not righteous, it doesn't count as a good life, see. So, we have pursued the right things. And you notice you pursue 2 things, you get 3, right? Pursue the right things, you'll receive more. more than you can get. John.
You think if you could say, if you pursue righteousness without loyal love, you may not find righteousness?
I would say you won't find righteousness without it, yes. Because what people often forget, okay, is it the spirit of the law or is it love? And love, you know, and they get to arguing differences over law versus spirit of things. But how can you be righteous and not love?
It's like 1 John.
The greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Second is love your neighbors yourself. So you can't be righteous and not love because you've disobeyed the greatest commandments. So they try to make distinctions there where I don't think there's a valid case for it. You get, if I'm going to be righteous, I'm going to be loving. The fruit of the Spirit is love. Okay, so is the fruit of the Spirit righteous? Well, it's got to be. If it's not righteous, it's not fruit of the Spirit, it's works of the flesh. Okay, so I mean, considering the differences is a valid hermeneutical principle, difference between words, but you also got to find the similarities and don't make distinctions where the Bible doesn't do that. Pursue the right things, you'll receive more than you give. 22 says, a wise man scales the city of the mighty. The word for scale, of all things, they just got tired of translating it what they normally translate it, because it's used 888 times. And it is the word Allah. A-L-A-H. It means to go up. He who goes up. Now you could say scales the walls of it. It's good translation, but the root meaning of the word is to go up. A wise man scales the city of the mighty. The word mighty is the gibberim. It's the plural that's used. The gabor is a mighty man of valor. He's a fighting man. And it says, a wise man goes up the city of the mighty man and brings down the stronghold in which they trust. Did God ever tell the Jews, don't trust in your wall cities and your fortresses? Did he ever tell them that? If you go build these things, you can build them. It's fine. You build them. You build your fortress. Don't trust in them. Okay? This is what Solomon's trying to get across here. He says, you can take the mighty man, and he's hidden away. How mighty is he if he's hidden away in the fortress? He said, you can go over that. Cyrus went under that wall in Babylon and took the city of Babylon. See, what did they do in Babylon? They trusted in their fortresses. What did the Jews do at times? Trusted in their fortresses. He says, but wisdom will bring it down. The principle is wisdom can humble even the most important of people by showing the fallacies of their objects of trust. Fallacy, plural. And when I was going through this point, I thought of an interview I saw once with Ben Stein and Richard Dawkins. Dawkins is a militant atheist. And Ben Stein was interviewing him. Now, Ben Stein, anybody seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off? Yeah. Bueller. That's the guy, the teacher that kept looking for him. He's a brilliant man. And he took on Richard Dawkins. And Ben Stein did it by asking questions and let him hang himself. Like, where did life begin? And eventually Dawkins came around and said, well, what had to happen? Life began when some aliens from another planet planted seeds on this planet. And Ben Stein, in all of his classic pose, he was interviewing like this, and he just turned toward the camera and smiled. Because what had he done? The guy had hung himself. He's talking about how foolish some thinking is, and then he just uttered a foolish statement like that because it didn't answer the question, where did life begin? If there is life on other planets, where did it begin? He didn't even go there. So this is a man showing the fallacy of the object of trust, which was their own intellect, by letting them back their way into a corner. Verse 23 says, he who guards, this word we've seen many times, shamar is the word, you, means you guard it because it's valuable. It's a participle, so it's an ongoing lifestyle type of activity. He who guards his mouth and his tongue. In other words, as long as you're guarding your mouth and your tongue. Participle. Guards, shamar, another participle. As long as you're guarding your mouth and your tongue, you're guarding, he says he's guarding, his soul, his nephesh, from troubles. Troubles is an interesting word. It's the word mitzaroth. M-I-Z-Z-O-R-O-T-H. It's used 73 times in the Old Testament. It's used in Genesis 42:21. If you want to picture what this word means, it is used on the anguish of the anguish on the face of Jacob whenever he was told of the loss of Benjamin. Or of Joseph, rather. Okay? The anguish that was there. So this is what he says, you guard your mouth and your tongue, you're guarding your mouth from the pressures of life, the real tough ones, the real hard ones. Now, did Jacob guard his mouth and his tongue? He made a few goofs along the way. Okay. He did make a few goofs along. He made some great statements along the way. But I would think one of the things that he, the statements he made along the way, he didn't guard his mouth and his tongue, was whenever Joseph told him about the dream that the sun, moon, and stars would bow down to him, and that that was going to include his daddy and his brothers. And they all laughed, including Jacob. He denied the prophecy. Had he accepted the prophecy, he would have known that Joseph was not dead, like his brothers had told him. And what was the last thing that Jacob did before he died? You know, you jump from early chapters in chapter 30 or so, and you end up in chapter 50, and it said, what did he do? He took his staff, and he bowed down to Joseph. Right? Then he died. He had something yet to do, but he didn't guard his mouth and his tongue. And it cost him 17 years at least of anguish, thinking his son was gone until he realized what had happened. Principles that guarded speech helps guard against the deserved pressures of life. Guarded speech helps guard against the deserved pressures of life, because sometimes we open our mouth and put both feet in it. Peter was good at that. Okay? But he managed to come back. I'm thankful we have a forgiving God who displays chesed to his kids. Verse 24. Here's another one of these verses that Solomon just says, oh, you think you got me all figured out here. He says, proud. Proud is the word Zed. Z-E-D. D-H, actually. Z-E-D-H. This word is used 13 times. We saw it multiple times in Psalm 119. And it means presumptuously proud. It's used to describe prophetical Babylon in Isaiah 13:11. It's a narcissistic type of pride that just assumes a position of superiority over everybody else. Proud, comma, haughty. Haughty is the word yahir. Yahir? Let's see if I can get this one right. I have to write it on the board because it's only used twice, so I'll only get to write it ever again if I ever do this. Whenever we go through and fully exegete Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 5, we'll see this word again. Haughty is a word that means inflated by intoxicants. Aha, I muted myself. Haughty is a word that means inflated by intoxicants. So, presumptuously proud, inflated by intoxicants. We know from a study of intoxicants that it's not just alcoholic beverages it's talking about. And when it's used in relationship to this, it's talking about spiritual intoxicants. Israel will become an intoxicant to the nations, a different word. They all want to do away with her. So it says proud, haughty, scoffer. Scoffer is the word letz, L-E-T-Z. This word we've seen many times within the past year. And this is the word that means a person who makes mouths. Mouths, M-O-U-T-H-S. Like, you know, your kids. You tell them something and you get, whatever. It's the mouth that comes along. Or they hear something and then goes, and the mouth changes to show disdain, disagreement. It changes to make you think you're stupid, or at least try. That's what this word is about. They translated scoffer. Because a scoffer is one who is making mouths at somebody else, basically accusing them of not knowing what they are. Proud, haughty, scoffer are his names. Whose names? Who acts? The word acts is asa. And it's a word that means to manufacture, make something out of something. Taking an event and turning it into something else. Who acts with insolent pride. And here Solomon is just playing with us. The word insolent is the word avar. We get the word Hebrew from it. Passing over. Okay? The Passover meal. The Hebrews, the Jews. Insolent is this. Is how they translated it, who acts with a passing over, and then it uses the word zadon, Z-A-D-O-N. Zadon is a word that is used 11 times, and it's used in Deuteronomy 17, verse 12. It's in a paragraph that describes this kind of pride as a person who refuses to accept the verdict of a priest. They take a case to a priest for a decision and then do not accept the verdict of the priest who had the authority to do it. The penalty for that type of pride was death. Now, that's the word that is used here. It's pretty powerful word. It's also used in Deuteronomy 18:22 of a false prophet who speaks. It's what they are, how they are described. A false prophet that speaks with a passing over type of pride that says, I know what's going to happen, when they really don't know what's going to happen. So if you're looking at this word, it's one who just knows better than everybody else and refuses to accept the judgment of the court and refuses any leadership or guidance. That's the false prophet. So, proud, haughty, scoffer are his names, who acts with a passing over type of pride. They ran out of pride words. That's what they did. And they're starting to look for some. And that's why the principle is arrogance has many descriptions. Because when you start trying to nail down all these words that deal with arrogance and pride and all these things. There's so many different ones. There's so many nuances. There are words they didn't even use here, like to be inflated, to be puffed up with great pride. And the Greek uses that word a lot. So the whole concept of pride is thinking your way is better than God's. And it takes a lot of different expressions in that regard. Let's the making the funny mouse at. Okay, you hear something, yeah, right. You know, and then the oh, well, I know better than you, or the I am better than you type of pride. Arrogance has a lot of descriptions. What is right at the top of the list of the seven deadly sins? Arrogance. Verse 25, the desire of the sluggard, lazy person, puts him to death, for his hands refuse to work. Principle, laziness can be deadly. If they don't do anything whatsoever, it can be deadly. Verse 26 says, all day long he, in context, the sluggard, is craving. He wants something. While the righteous gives and does not hold back. The principle is that righteous people are gracious givers. Because it's not about us. Philippians 2:3, just being one of many, many verses. Do nothing from selfish ambition or empty conceit. Humility of mind, consider others as more important than yourself. There is loaded with that. So righteousness is not about everything I can get. Righteousness is about having an attitude of grace. See, we don't often connect righteousness and grace together, do we? But God is a gracious attitude. And he said that's how he wants us to act. He wants us to be an imitator of him. Does that include grace? Okay. So we're not supposed to be all justice. We're supposed to be enough justice to maintain the order and keep the peace so we can live a quiet and godly life. There's supposed to be enough justice, but there's supposed to be enough grace as well. What do we do? How do we know when to carry out the sentence or display grace? Can you give me a formula? And I've never found one. Never found one. You start looking for things in the Bible, like one time Paul stood firm and got thrown in jail. Another time he stood firm, spoke to a group of people, and they tried to stone him. Another time, he was let down out of window and ran. Show me a formula that fits those. Okay? I can't find one. What I do find is prayer to asking for guidance from the Holy Spirit. What do you do in this circumstance? Because, once again, if we could walk by formula, we could walk by sight. He doesn't want us to do that. He wants us to walk by. Righteous people are gracious givers. Okay? The unrighteous people have been described throughout the Bible as greedy. The rich of the last days, James 5, withheld the pay of the laborers in their fields. So there is that concept, if I'm going to be righteous, I'm going to be loving, I'm going to be gracious, I'm going to be giving, that's who I'm going to be. That's the way God is. That's the way we're supposed to be. Let's pray. Father, again, thank you for your word. For the blessings we have gleaned tonight from it, for the challenges. And Father, we're just amazed every time we open up this book of the divine intelligence, the divine wisdom that was put into it through a human being with sin nature just like ours. It shows the great wisdom that just surpasses all understanding. We thank you for that. May we be mindful of the principles we've learned tonight. May we apply them and use them and live by them and be changed by them so that you get the glory. For we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen.